Welcome to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Talk about stuff that's messing with your head and crazy stuff that's happening in the bed. Why? Because many church folks are falling into darkness. The Bible calls us to walk as children of light. The Bible says, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of weird stuff that is going on in our neighborhood, particularly in the African-American neighborhood. There's a lot of stuff going on. You know, O.J. Simpson done got parole, done got out of jail. There's Willie Lynch syndrome. You know, a lot of times black folks say white folks is keeping us in jail, but actually there's a Willie Lynch syndrome. Even though Willie Lynch was a man who used to own slaves and taught the slave owners how to keep the, he taught the slave masters how to put fear in the slaves, where they'll be slaves the rest of their life. And we still got that going on today, ladies and gentlemen. Black folks, we keeping our own self in slavery because of the Willie Lynch syndrome. But I'm going to get on out of the way. I want you to hear Judge Joe Brown. I like to check in with him because he can give a little insight that, because, you know, he's in high places too. So he can give us a little more insight to kind of really what's going on in the neighborhood. All right, get close to your radio and listen as Judge Joe Brown talks.
News TV, the
News Free Dixie.
News Free Dixie for the 21st century.
All right.
All right, we all be honored to have on once again the one and only, the Honorable Judge Joe Brown. Truly a wise man for all ages. You gonna tell him like it is, straight no chaser. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm all right, young man. I'm doing fine.
It's good to hear that, because I know I get a lot of requests. Make sure you check in on Judge. Keep him around long enough. We need his wisdom out there. We want his insights. And people say, well, how can we support getting you back on TV? What people need to do to help you get back on TV?
I can't say what I'm doing right now, but I'm working on it. I may have something coming up that's somewhat different, but matter of fact, I'm looking at some paperwork right now on it. So I can't discuss it at this point in time. It's got to remain confidential until it breaks, if it breaks. But you might see me back on somewhere doing something.
That's excellent. But if can anybody out there do anything to help you, like do a petition drive or something? What can people do to push them on the process?
That certainly wouldn't hurt. You know, you can respond to CNN, CBS, ABC, NBC. Like, we listen to these guys you got on. We'd like to hear from the judge. We used to like to tune in to hear his wisdom. And that certainly wouldn't hurt. That's what they did to save Star Trek, the series. They took it off and they had a write-in campaign, put it back on. So I certainly would appreciate it, and I might have a few things to say to the listeners. But anyway, you had some questions, young brother, you wanted to put at me, or put to me. Let's see, about O.J.?
Yeah, the O.J. Simpson, you know, what happened yesterday. I mean, everybody was looking at that yesterday. In Nevada, all eyes was on Nevada at the parole hearing, and he was, you know, they let him go. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, let's put it this way. Parole hearings are extremely boring, by the numbers, and when you have the would-be victim not opposing parole, and you have a situation where there are no write-ups and sterling good conduct by the inmate, that's almost an automatic. It strikes me as absolutely preposterous that they wanted to televise it and make a big incident out of it. This whole OJ mess is a manufacture, is a construct of Nancy Grace. She had just gotten into Hollywood and she's trying to make a name for herself. So every day she came up with the fiction that she'd set through the whole trial, and she had all of this scathing commentary about how bad the case was against OJ. Well, I was on the bench at that time, and I taped everything in my chambers, and I looked at it every day before I wrapped up and got on out of the office, so to speak. And she would talk about it's just inconceivable that the defense can recover from what happened today, and the public took that. And I looked at it, and it couldn't get any better for the defense. And day after day, this kind of stuff, and then I found out later, when I talked to people that I knew that were involved with the L.A. court system, they said she wasn't even down there. She'd show up after everything was over and ask what happened and then fictionalize what she put out to the public. So thanks to Nancy Grace, they think that O.J. got away with something. Most people who actually followed the whole trial or who were there said that they didn't even really have probable cause against OJ, but they had a strong case of probable cause against Furman as an accessory. And when the jury didn't stay out but half hours, basically because they didn't have anything to go on, it was like no case. The DNA evidence that Nancy Grace said was just overwhelming. Well, the experts testified, well, you know, what we have here would not exclude 95,000 other people in L.A. County. And it was someone who would be of Northeast Mediterranean extraction or perhaps from Sicily. O.J. could conceivably be in here, but this is not anywhere near limiting this O.J. There was, why did we have 10 cc's of missing serological evidence? That's blood. Well, what are you doing, sir, taking the sample back to the scene of the crime and sprinkling it all over the area? That came out on tape. Or the bloody socks at the foot of the bed. They had an earlier tape, no bloody socks. While that tape was being shot with audio, you can hear the people who are doing it asking Furman what he's doing in the bedroom. And then 45 minutes later, after they've gone and their tape shows no bloody socks, la-di-da, bloody socks at the foot of the bed, you've heard Furman identified as being it. If it does not fit, you must acquit. I know the people that did the gloves. O.J. took a size 2XL. The glove was a size large. Furman had a large. O.J. couldn't fit in it. Furman's the one found the glove under several feet of dead leaves in the back of a totally dark yard. You know, so you get all this building up, and LAPD had a bad reputation, and something the media did not cover was four of the primary detectives wind up going to jail for planting evidence in other cases, and California had to let 128 people out of the penitentiary because of the falsified evidence that these same detectives had introduced or compiled against them. So it's a big thing, and it was like black man killing white woman, how dare he? It was a farce. But then this thing that he got put in jail for that the parole hearing was about is one of the embarrassments to the entirety of American criminal law. The law is not supposed to be vindictive, and that's exactly what you got. It was effectively a strong arm, not even a strong arm robbery. It was more of a theft. The flea market situation was one where his personal belongings, Super Bowl rings, other stuff he knows he did not sell, but LAPD took out of his house, autographed pictures that were given to him, taken out of his house, and he had some bodyguards. They were unarmed. They went over there to reason with the person. and they got joined by an individual that OJ apparently thought was with the bodyguards, and bodyguards thought it was OJ, and nobody knew him. He didn't get prosecuted, but he was the one with the gun that turned the whole thing into a robbery attempt.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got elected to 2 8-year terms as a criminal court judge. And I have been involved in the legal profession for 45 years. 47, let's put it that way. And I was completely embarrassed by the disgusting and disgraceful conduct of the judge in that case, a woman who turned her back on defense counsel and made a point of sipping or slurping on a 7-Eleven Slurpee. That was just a disgrace when it came to non-judicial, inappropriate judicial conduct. So they got him. It was basically a theft. He did 9 years, no problems. That's supposed to be an automatic, but they couldn't leave it. And it's a counterpoint that the media industry is using to generate ratings and stay tuned for, so they could titillate the public about the OJ matter. I can't recall, in the 47 years I've been involved with the law, ever, not one time, when they have televised or attempted to televise a parole hearing, not even for the Manson crowd. It's just disgusting what they're stooping to. But anyway, that's my take on the OJ situation.
It was interesting too, because it seemed like it's not about justice or legality; it's about vendetta. It's the vendetta system, and to hear the commentators talk about domestic violence, he was never charged with domestic violence. He was in there for like still a theft. But he will be the victim. I mean, the poster child of domestic violence now.
Oh yeah, and then don't forget the evidence the jury heard from his first wife. He never lifted a finger to her. And also the evidence the jury heard about Nicole, she was a junkie. She owed every big time drug dealer in the LA County area, practically, or at least West Hollywood and the West LA, a bunch of money.
Hey, what's up, my?
All right, let's skip. See, can we skip that ad?
A bunch of money.
That's true. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Judge. Go ahead.
And you've got somebody with a drug problem. You have to understand there are all kinds of situations that junkies get themselves into. They can't contain their emotions. They get violent, and sometimes somebody's got to constrain them. So there was no evidence that OJ was a violent man.
And also, I want to say this, too. I think it's interesting because, like you said, they're rewriting history right now with OJ. Like everybody's making money off of OJ, but it was also, I read I guess the LA Times or Chicago Tribune like 20 something years ago that Nicole Brown Simpson's sister was dating a former mafia hitman and a witness protection program person named Anthony Tony the Animal Fiato. He said that he heard police officers making OJ the only suspect in the case, but they just tunnel vision on OJ.
I heard him testify.
Okay.
They had him in shadows, and there was also another person in the, well, at least I heard what I take when he testified out of the jury's presence. The two of them that were in the witness protection program testified that, in their opinion, the killing was a warning to them to keep quiet because both of them were dating a Nicole sister. There were two sisters involved, not just one.
Right. Wow.
Hey, I'm sure you didn't get to hear that, but, you know, it was just more like this isn't really a case.
Hey, also,
they had one thing that Nancy Grace tried to construe on the day the testimony came out. It's just horrible for the defense, but they brought in somebody who, between himself and his father, had operated the police impound lot for 27 years, and they testified when they brought the Bronco in. There was not one drop of blood in it. They went through it with a fine-tooth comb looking, It was then locked in a small area with four padlocks, the keys to which was only by LAPD detectives. And when they were instructed to tow it to the crime lab, more than a week later, when they looked in, it was covered with blood.
Oh, man. That's crazy.
So that was the testimony, but Nancy Grace said, oh, it was just devastating to the defense. Couldn't get any better. So Darden and Marcia Clark for the state, with what I also thought was an incompetent performance, jumped all up and down and tried to impeach their own witness to no end. And by the way, how both of them got killed is interesting. Each of them was fatally wounded by one stab wound to the chest, upper chest, that destroyed the aortas, and wrecked the two top chambers of the heart for both of them. And then their throats were slit literally from ear to ear. Somebody reached in with a pair of pliers whose marks were still on the tongues and pulled the tongues out through the slit throat. And that's a Colombian necktie. There was blood on the ground. There were imprints from two pair of shoes. The testimony is that somebody had a size 10.5 and somebody had a size 9, or somebody had a 9.5 and somebody had a 10. I forget which off of the top of my head. Mm-hmm. But OJ wore a size 12.
Mm.
So a personal friend of mine got called by the state as an expert on knife killing.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't call him because when he looked at their animation, it was supposed to be a reconstruction of the events. He said, that's impossible. That's not what happened. He said it was two people, and there were two sets of footprints there.
Wow.
And that individual's name is Clifford Stewart, also known as Master Stewart,
mm-hmm.
the Guru Sensei, and Pendekar Stewart. Black Belt Magazine calls him probably the most dangerous human alive in North America. His testimony was not usable by the state because essentially he exonerated OJ. He said he didn't do that. One man can't do it.
Let me ask you this about, a lot of people might have thought, I heard a theory about mistaken identity, that the people who killed Nicole might have thought she was Faye Resnick, her friend, who was also a druggie. I don't think she testified in the trial, right, Faye Resnick?
No. The word was, in certain quarters, they didn't realize Nicole was OJ's ex. They just thought she was some elitist junkie running around owing everybody a lot of money for drugs.
Oh,
And go and see, Ron Goldman was one of this bunch of gay guys that hung around on Santa Monica Boulevard in a stretch they called the Boys Club. And they testified in the trial that they considered Nicole to be what they call a fag hag. In other words, a woman that hangs around with the homosexuals, and she was always good to party with and would supply a lot of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
That's the testimony and the terminology is not mine. That's what was brought out during the trial.
But they didn't even want to focus on Nicole. I'm not saying that, you know, she just got killed because of her character or lifestyle choices, but the facts are facts. If this is true, why did the media...
Because it was Nancy Grace,
okay,
who's the only reporter that stayed down there or claimed to be down there every day. She just
mm-hmm.
gotten in Hollywood. She prosecuted for about 4.5 years, and that's the extent of her legal experience at the time. She wanted to make it big, and she just cut no corners from fabricating a good story. And that's been essentially what's been going on with her ever since. One of the most disgusting displays I've ever seen from an attorney was from her with this Casey Anthony thing. She was out for 4 years trying to rabble rouse, saying that they should abolish the Fifth Amendment because the public had a right to know. And she drummed up a whole lot of you know, the prosecution had to go to trial with it, but like the jury said, they didn't produce who did it, when it happened, how it happened, what was used to do it. So they acquitted Casey Anthony, and she was running around trying to hide that. She does that all the time. There was a situation where some woman got killed in a lab at an Ivy League school.
Mm-hmm.
I wound up being on Larry King Live somewhat opposite her. She was a call in on that, or they called her. And I was quite frankly embarrassed by what was obviously her attempt to pass off having bribed some police officer or official to give her information that had not yet been released, and she was trying to claim she had discerned it through being a Sherlockia Holmes rather than just a charlatan who went off and paid for some inside information that was supposed to be this dynamic bombshell analysis.
Wow.
So you see, that's one of the dangers of media. It set back race relations quite a bit. And that was just one unprincipled scoundrel that was involved in the media trying to get established. And there you go. That's how dangerous the media can be. And we go for it. And it's the Goebbels principle. Josef Goebbels, Minister mm-hmm. of Propaganda for the Nazis. He said, tell a lie one time and it's a lie. Tell it 1,000 times and it's the truth. Principle, tell a lie long enough, loud enough, you can get anybody to believe it.
That's right. Well, let me ask you this too. Go ahead, I'm sorry, Judge.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to ask you concerning, I saw this article recently in the Town and Country about F. Lee Bailey, the famous lawyer, and how he was basically blackballed by the system, it seemed, because he represented OJ. And not only did he represent OJ effectively, but he also believed in OJ's innocence. And still does, and that he's being punished for it. Like right now, he doesn't have a law license, a legal license to practice, but he does consult above a hair salon up in Maine somewhere. Have you read that article? Are you aware of that article at all?
I'm aware of it. F. Lee Bailey got famous because he represented a Russian spy, free of charge. Somewhat similar circumstances to this movie, The Bridge with Tom Hanks.
Oh, yeah, Bridge of Spies or something like that. Mm-hmm.
He's a good trial lawyer, but God, he's got to be late 80s now.
83, yeah.
Mid 80s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of time, you know. Retire, be a consultant, have somebody
else. All right, we're going to stop the tape right there today, but we'll pick up right there tomorrow. That was Judge Joe Brown on talking about the O.J. Simpson parole trial. All right, thank you so kindly for joining us. Listen to us all day long because we're in your corner right here on Ghostbusters.